Welcome to Fact Check Radio, a weekly wrap-up of spin and deception in politics. I'm Lori Robertson, managing editor of factcheck.org.
And I'm Vivica Novak, Fact Check's deputy director. This week, we'll look at misleading claims from Republicans and Democrats on the Bush tax cuts.
Also, is the Obama administration allowing companies to opt out of the new healthcare law? We'll look at the truth behind that internet claim.
But first, we found President Barack Obama making a false claim about Social Security in a press conference this week.
Obama rewrote history when he was defending a deal he struck with congressional Republicans to extend the Bush tax cuts for everyone for 2 years. Here's what he said about compromise and the origins of the Social Security system.
And that means because it's a big, diverse country and people have a lot of complicated positions, it means that in order to get stuff done, we're going to compromise. This is why FDR, when he started Social Security, it only affected widows and orphans. You did not qualify.
Social Security was originally only for widows and orphans? That's not true. President Franklin D. Roosevelt signed the Social Security Act into law in 1935, and it did exactly what one would think. It created a new social insurance program that paid benefits to workers when they retired at age 65.
The Social Security Administration's website says the first person to apply for a payment was a retired motorman in Cleveland named Ernest Ackerman. In fact, widows and orphans weren't eligible for benefits until 1939, when the law was amended.
The change enabled spouses and children and survivors in the event of the death of a worker to receive benefits.
But as Obama said, Social Security was a compromise. The Social Security Administration says the original law didn't do everything supporters had wanted. It didn't include government workers, railroad employees, the self-employed, farm workers, and workers at nonprofits.
The original law also gave aid to states to help mothers and children, but it didn't solely provide benefits to widows and orphans, as the president said.
Moving on, the expiring Bush tax cuts have garnered a lot of headlines lately as Congress and the White House try to iron out a deal to extend at least some and likely all of them.
And we heard plenty of spin from politicians on the Sunday talk shows on this topic. First, here's Republican Senator John Kyle of Arizona giving a misleading view of public opinion.
For the upper income people.
First of all, there's a Gallup poll of a week ago that had 80% of Americans saying don't increase taxes. But I think the point is
Kyle, who appeared on CBS's Face the Nation, was responding to a question about why he wanted to extend the tax cuts for upper-income Americans. So his answer left the impression that the Gallup poll showed 80% favored extending the tax cuts for everyone, even those with very high incomes. But that's not true.
Instead, the USA Today Gallup poll found that 40% wanted to keep the tax cuts for everyone, and 44% wanted to set limits for upper-income earners. Other polls have similarly found that Americans are divided on whether the cuts should be extended for all income groups.
Also on Face the Nation, Democratic Senator Richard Durbin of Illinois claimed those tax cuts for the upper-income earners had caused the recession.
Bush economic policies. And the Bush economic policies of tax cuts for the wealthiest individuals have led us into this recession, cost us 15 million jobs, have utterly failed. You can't point to those policies.
Kyle rightly questioned that hyperbolic theory, saying,
and job production. They did not create the problem that we have today. That was a problem created, as you know, by the crash of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and the housing market, the so-called bubble. It had nothing to do with these tax rates.
Indeed, the financial crisis in 2008 was spurred by many culprits, including the Bush and Clinton administrations, homebuyers, mortgage brokers, Congress, Wall Street firms, and more. But Kyle then committed his own exaggeration, saying that without the tax cuts, the economy would be worse off.
The Congressional Research Service actually found that the economy performed worse, according to several measures, after the tax cuts were enacted than it had before. Some interpret that to mean the cuts hurt the economy, but not that they single-handedly caused the recession. Others say this shows the cuts didn't have much of an impact while other factors were affecting the economy.
Let's do one more on the tax cuts. On NBC's Meet the Press, Democratic Senator John Kerry exaggerated the cost of extending those cuts for upper-income folks.
Tax cuts for now, for a temporary period.
We want to extend the tax cuts for every single American, but up to a level that makes sense in terms of our economy. You talk about uncertainty of the economy. How much uncertainty is there to our economy when you add $800 billion to the deficit?
But the president seems willing to...
The cost is actually $700 billion, not $800 billion, and that's over 10 years. That's how much it would cost to extend the cuts for individuals earning more than $200,000 a year and families making more than $250,000, according to the Congressional Budget Office.
Finally, has the Obama administration allowed companies to opt out of the new health care law?
That's the rumor spreading on the internet, but it's not true. Instead, what the administration has done is approve waivers, more than 200 now, to companies that provide cheap, bare-bones health plans to employees. The government wants those companies to be able to continue to provide that coverage until 2014, when the insurance exchanges are set up and subsidies are provided.
So what exactly do the waivers do?
Well, they exempt those companies from one provision of the law, temporarily. The healthcare law aims to eliminate monetary caps in coverage. Some plans say they'll only cover up to a certain dollar amount of medical expenses per year. And this fall, a provision went into effect saying annual coverage caps couldn't be lower than $750,000 a year. Over several years, that ceiling will be raised until, eventually, no caps on coverage will be allowed at all.
And the plans these companies offered didn't meet the new requirement?
No, they didn't. Retail and restaurant companies like McDonald's provide what are called mini med plans to low-income and part-time employees. The workers might pay only $20 or $30 a month for a plan like this, but the benefits are very limited. McDonald's annual coverage caps for the mini med plans range from $2,000 to $10,000 a year.
Well, so it sounds like you're out of luck if you have a major illness.
Yeah, and the plans are controversial for that reason. Critics think they give people a false sense of security.
But they'll be around at least for a few years?
Yes, the waivers allow these plans to ignore that annual limit requirement. The waivers are good for 1 year, and then the companies must reapply. But come 2014, the administration doesn't expect to be handing out any more waivers.
And that's when people will be able to buy coverage through state-based insurance exchanges, and low- and mid-income individuals can get tax credits and subsidies to help them do that. Plus, the law expands Medicaid, so some low-income employees could qualify for that.
And listeners can read more about misleading health care and other claims at factcheck.org. FactCheck is a project of the University of Pennsylvania's Annenberg Public Policy Center. And that's it for this edition of FactCheck Radio. I'm Lori Robertson.
And I'm Vivica Novak. Thanks for joining us.